Welcome to Historically St. Pete. Hi, my name is Rui Frias, and I, of course, have the coolest job in town. I'm the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History, located on the pier, right at the entrance of the pier. We've been there sharing the history of St. Petersburg for 104 years now, so we're really happy to share this stuff with you here on Radio St. Pete. You know, for years, you know, even growing up in this town, you always heard, you know, about how awful the summers were here, how businesses closed down. And actually, as a kid, I still remember the building that's across, the little center that's across the street from Williams Park by the open air post office. I remember walking down that sidewalk, and in one of the businesses, there was a sign in the window said, "See you in October." And that was like par for the course here for St. Pete, right? Some businesses shut down. In the early days, hotels definitely shut down. They were just open for the season. And of course, the residents of St. Pete hightailed it for North Carolina for the most part when it came to summer. So they were kind of slow and kind of boring. But things happened here, and people don't realize how much stuff happened here in June and July during our history. Like, for instance, one of the things, and this is kind of modern history, kind of maybe, when we're looking at the history of the Tampa Bay Rays or back then, the Devil Rays. I mean, did you know that the Devil Rays' first interleague game lasted 12 innings? It is the start of the Florida Citrus Series showdown. So the Tampa Bay Devil Rays made franchise history on June 22nd, 1998, when they played the first interleague game hosting the Florida Marlins at Tropicana Field. The matchup marked the beginning of what would become known as the Citrus Series, an in-state rivalry between Florida's two Major League Baseball teams. A crowd of about 24,000 people turned out to watch this historic event, which quickly became a memorable battle. The Marlins struck first, but the Devil Rays responded and kept the game close throughout the evening. Strong pitching and timely defensive plays carried the game into extra innings, where neither team could break the deadlock for several innings. After more than 4 hours of play, the Marlins finally pushed across the winning run in the 12th inning, handing Tampa Bay a 3-2 loss. Despite the outcome, the game represented another milestone during the Devil Rays' inaugural season and gave local fans their first opportunity to watch a regular season matchup against Florida's other major league teams. Today, the Citrus Series remains a unique chapter in Florida baseball history, connecting fans on both coasts through a sometimes friendly, sometimes not, in-state rivalry. If you want to learn more about our baseball history, stop by the museum, check out Schrader's Little Cooperstown exhibit. You'll find part of what is the world's largest collection of autographed baseballs on display, as well as stories of the Rays, spring training, and everything that happened here in baseball in the early days of St. Petersburg. So one other thing I want to talk about is the whole idea of a lot of it's come up recently with the monument on the pier or the art piece on the pier and other discussions of, you know, America 250, of the first flight that happened here in St. Petersburg. When people talk about, you know, St. Pete's contribution to American history, that first flight of the Benoit airboat between St. Petersburg and Tampa always pops up. And of course, who gets the credit for it? Well, Thomas Benoit for building the plane, but mostly Tony Janus, right? The dashing pilot who lifted off on, you know, from the Central Yacht Basin on the water there on the 1st of January, 1914 at 10 o'clock in the morning, carrying Mayor File across to Tampa in what would become the world's first commercial airline flight. But did you know that Tony Janus's brother was also a pioneering pilot who was in St. Petersburg flying during that time? So the story of this goes beyond Tony. And, you know, I want to talk about the legacy of Roger Janus. So when people hear the name Janus, of course, it's Tony that they think about in that world's first flight. But his younger brother, Roger Waitman Janus, also played an important role in aviation history. In 1914, he served as a pilot for the St. Petersburg-Tampa Airboat Line, the pioneering service that connected the two cities across Tampa Bay. But in addition to flying charter trips, he also worked as a flight instructor at the Benoit Flying School, helping train pilots during the earliest years of powered flight. That hangar and that flight school is located exactly where that beautiful Benoit sculpture is on the pier. So you could go there and sign up, and the Janus boys, especially Roger, would be happy to teach you how to fly. Now, Roger was known among aviators for developing a technique to recover from dangerous tail spins, an important advancement at a time when aircraft were often unpredictable and flying remained a risky endeavor. Now, this always just, you know, I've never understood this. It was back in 1914, at this period of early flight when the Janus boys were flying, and even into the early 1920s, who do you think taught people how to fly? Who taught these guys how to fly? They taught themselves mostly how to fly, right? So you jumped in one of those planes, and you either started breaking records or you became a casualty, right? One or the other. But Roger's work helped improve pilot safety and contributed to the growing understanding of aircraft control. During World War I, Roger joined the aviation section of the U.S. Signal Corps and rose to the rank of captain. Tragically, he was killed in France in 1918 while testing a military aircraft. He was just 32 years old, leaving behind a legacy of innovation, service, and courage during aviation's formative years. You can explore more aviation history at the Museum of History, because we have that beautiful Flight 1 gallery with a flying replica of a Benoit airboat flying, hanging from the ceiling. And of course, enough history, including Tony Janus's original goggles. And people are shocked to know that we have those. The goggles that he wore in that first historic flight on January 1st, 1914. When he got out of the plane in Tampa, he dropped them and they broke. So he handed them to a young lady as a souvenir, and that young lady gave them to us many years later. So we've had them in the museum ever since. So join us at the museum at your next visit to the pier to check out the rest of St. Pete history, or stop by for one of our fantastic events, like on July 9th. We'll be hosting our Happy Hour with Historians series, and the speaker on that evening will be Dr. Kimberly Voss, who will be talking about Florida women and social change, how the women of Florida led this national movement. And also on July 20th, author, journalist, historian Bill DeYoung will be discussing, signing, unveiling the latest edition of the Vintage St. Pete book series. It's volume 4, actually. These are fantastic books that we love, and we love to work with Bill on helping him research and produce these. And then, of course, the 7th of August, what I've been waiting for is the return of Elvis Presley to St. Petersburg. That date will mark the anniversary of Elvis performing at the Florida Theater here in St. Petersburg a month before he left for New York and appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. So we'll have a special day of Elvis remembrance, including some music and some talks and some good Elvis fun there. So I want to thank everybody for listening, and please join us next week on Historically St. Pete here on Radio St. Pete.